Hi, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Slay, Second Language Acquisition for Everyone. Hello, Bill.
Hi, Ben.
Bill and I have been engaging with some of y'all on our social media about our book study that we will be doing this school semester, which is on the text Proficiency-Based Instruction, Teaching Grammar for Proficiency by Ritz and Travers, published by ACTFL. It is not too late to join us. If you are interested in talking about the book, some great ways to engage are to comment directly on the posts on our Facebook page. We have a SLA, Second Language Acquisition for Everyone, Facebook page that you can engage on. Just comment directly on those posts. If you're on Blue Sky, I've been quote posting the question prompts and then including my own responses in a thread there. Bill, you've been on Instagram and Threads.
I've been on Instagram a little bit. It's the first and second week of school during this book study that we decided to start right at the beginning of the school year.
Heck yeah, I did.
And yeah, maybe not like the most time abundant period of the school year. But that said, like yeah, I have been posting some of our other socials. I think most of the social accounts are Slay Pod, Slayyyy Pod, and that should be for most places. But for Instagram, I don't even know how Instagram works, so I just
We're
post
trying.
things. I
Does
guess you like s reply in the comments there.
Yeah, get in the comments. Go wild.
Yeah.
We'll include links to all of our social accounts in the show notes for this episode. As you can see, it's funny, this episode is about technology use, and we're over here like, how do technology what do? So we'll provide those links for you. We'd happy to see everybody in the comments and quote posting about this. Shout out to people who have already engaged with us. Hi, Denise, Steve, Lake, Stacy, Timothy. We'd love to see you there on those posts and would be happy to see you again when we resume the book study with chapter two next week. So that would be the week beginning September 1st. There we go. Yeah, week
Yeah,
beginning September 1st,
September
right on Labor Day.
1st, chapter 2. It's a little bit of a hefty one.
Yeah.
So start now.
Yeah. And I also don't I think it would be
And
great too if people engage
also just
later if
skim.
they if they
Yeah.
yeah. Well, and if they join up later, skim it, just kind of share their thoughts. We're always happy for the engagement. All right. Let's get to today's episode, Billiam. Today we are talking about the use of technology, but specifically AI in learning and how students perceive that use.
Which students?
Our s students. What?
Well, Gen Z students specifically.
Oh, I see. Oh, you mean the first three words of the article title? We're
Yeah.
doing really good over here. Good. So yeah, Gen Z, specifically Gen Z students, which if you're teaching secondary right now, you got primarily Gen Z students. Gen Alpha is a coming. So we're talking about students that are roughly 13 to 28 years old. So we're talking about Gen Z and Gen Z's perceptions of technology use and specifically AI. Bill, tell me, Gaslight. What's working? What's not working with technology?
I think what's not working is that we're getting a bunch of new technology and nobody knows how to use it yet. So we can't teach students how to use technology if we haven't learned how to use it ourselves.
Yes.
So I think like that's a big barrier right now is we're all learning how to use or how like what role AI is going to have in our lives moving forward. So we don't yet know the best uses, I think. So, I think that's a big barrier right now.
I totally agree. I don't think that there has been enough long-term use of this in a, and definitely the use is so uneven, and that it's so it's not essentially systematic, like how people are using it. Like, is everyone using it for X process? Is everyone using it for example, lesson planning? Is everyone using it for student engagement and interaction? Is everyone using it for feedback? Is everyone, like that? I don't know that there's been enough consistent study. And I think that is somewhat touched on in here, but we don't really know the long-term effects. And even this article admits that we don't have a lot of direct evidence as to how the use of technology in this new technology, this kind of next generation of technology, influences language proficiency growth. And so I am with you in that, like, there's so much new stuff all the time, and it's hard to know, like, what will be forgotten about pretty soon. You know what I thought about the other day that made me laugh was NFTs. Where'd the NFTs go, Bill?
No freaking
Freaking.
thought about that. I don't know. They
Were
did
set.
nothing happened to them. They're non-fungible.
Not fun is what I'm hearing. So all that to say is that there some technologies like may seem to make a big splash, and then everyone's like, wait a minute, and kind of like comes to their senses. Where so I just don't know. I remain a heavy AI skeptic for environmental and ethical reasons, which we will dive into as part of our analysis of the article. But so that kind of holds me back from even wanting to dive into it. And I also think that my goals for language classes aren't met by the use of AI. I think like my goals essentially are that students gain interpersonal communication skills to be able to interact with people that are different from them, and then build like critical competence, like the ability to analyze and interpret their own culture and their own cultural background in comparison to and in mediation with other cultural backgrounds. I haven't seen a compelling use of technology. Like, I think there are technologies that we can use, you know, to interact with speakers from the target cultures. I think there are technologies that give us access to more products and practices. But again, this kind of newest generation of like AI-based stuff, I haven't found a convincing support for the goals that I have for my students in my classes.
Yeah, and I think goals are what are important. Like, what is it that you want the technology to do? Because if we don't know what we want it to do for our students, then there again we get stuck at a like a gap in knowledge, the digital divide, gap of use. Anyway, that's another barrier to using AI. I use it for things like cleaning up a text, which is something that the article asks about as well, which I thought was interesting. But when it comes to like whether or not students should be using it for language learning, yeah, I think there's I've found some things that I think could be helpful, but again, I also have like I don't want to overuse because of some shared environmental concerns. So.
I think my other thing with the incorporation of technology and like my perception of it is that I will admit even now, like I am an advanced speaker of German and I feel very comfortable in the language. And I sometimes use DeepL-Write, which is an analytical AI that, you know, looks at your writing sample that you put in and then offers suggestions for how to change it to be more native-like maybe. And I use that sometimes just to double, triple check like my stylistic. But I also have enough acquired competence in German to sometimes look at what it gives back to me as corrections and know, actually, that isn't quite what I meant. And so I think my version is slightly more right, or more what I want to convey.
Yeah,
But
that's how
that
I feel
comes
like
from.
with Grammarly. Like, I
Sure. Yeah,
mean,
totally.
yeah, I've been using that with grad school stuff because I need my writing to be clearer, and but I get the same things. It'll give me a suggestion, and I'm like, nah, but that doesn't really get what I want to say across. So,
Exactly. And I think we have all heard horror stories, you know, of like, you know, students trying to translate stuff and choosing the PERSA option, right? Like that paper jam comes out with like paper marmalade or something like that, you know, crazy stuff like that. But so that's like I don't want to say like a low level example, but a smaller localized example versus like this, like that we have so much acquired reading competence that has and listening competence that has gotten into our writing style, then that we're able to make more stylistic choices, even sometimes in defiance of this computer that says it knows everything. And our students, like most of my students, are novices and low intermediates just because of the amount of time that we're able to get together. And I don't know that they have the enough acquired competence, purely just enough time to have acquired writing style enough to make those distinctions. And so they might accept a change that, you know, an analytical AI makes without knowing how it might change shades of meaning or, you know, cult, you know, there might be cultural something underlying it.
Like, I forget who I heard this from, but it was at a conference or a workshop years ago, and it was something about like how you're talking about there with like the paper jam comes up with, like, we have to get our students to that level where they can go out and like use their phone as a resource, like when they do get just stuck on like a single word or something, but they have to have the knowledge, the mental representation already there to be able to put it in the right place, to take the information and actually use it to communicate.
Another aspect, again, is that I think, again, this thing that we all grapple with as teachers of languages generally is the desire that our students have coming into the course to be able to have a conversation fluently in the language. That's just kind of the way that it is presented to us. And we know that fluency is a spectrum of different things that students are able to do in the language at different levels of vocabulary and complexity, syntax, and all that sort of stuff. And again, what makes interpersonal communication so hard is the unplanned nature of it, the spontaneity, the speed of it. And these technologies, you know, a student can become proficient in improving their writing with it, improving their prepared speaking. And, you know, maybe there are some uses that I'm ignorant to where it could help them with their spontaneous interpersonal communication. But they're, you know, as of right now, students are not going to have access to that technology when someone addresses them on the street, in the cafe, in the train station, etc., at the speed that would make communication natural. And like, maybe we'll live in like a weird future where, you know, the in-ear translator is, you know, whatever.
Yeah, that's AirPods are getting that soon. So, hey, language teachers, make sure that your kids don't have their AirPods in, because are they listening to music or translating what you say? I'm guessing music, but you never know.
Right. Well, and I also would, maybe this is like the elder millennial in me, but I'm like, I don't want to build a dependence on technology for these things when the competence can be built through instruction and input and time and the things that have made language learning, you know, a long-term, strenuous to a certain extent goal, but also super worth it. So I would love for kids to be able to develop that a little bit more independently.
Maybe we need to be using the word competence with our students a little bit more. Like, Bill, like, that's a lot. Maybe not a lot clear, but we could teach it to be clearer than, say, language learning. Because, like, they understand what it is to learn something, more or less. But do they know how to become competent in something? So kind of like skilled versus, but just different language. Anyway.
My final roadblock is that students haven't understood the why behind our class well enough. And, you know, again, that takes me having an articulated vision for my class, but then also sharing that and kind of, you know, pulling that apart with my students so that they understand it as well. When a student hands me something that has been Google translated or that they have, you know, just pumped into AI, they don't understand that, like, I want to know their ideas and their writing. And that what helps me as their teacher to determine how we what we do in the rest of class is dependent on what I discover they can do.
Yeah.
So I'm taking data on what they need more input on, what they need more experience with. And again, if they're using the AI or the Google Translate or whatever it is to accomplish that task, they think I just want them to accomplish this task when really I want to know deeply, like, what language is in their head. I want to get my best picture of that and then respond to it as a way of showing care for them, as a way of showing that I care about them and the language in their brain.
100%. I feel that to my core. I don't know if this is a private school thing or not, but like, we have a set of a very publicly posted set of values around our school, and they're new this year because we're part doing our like accreditation process. And what I started doing last year was aligning classroom behaviors with the values. So like, one of our values this year is, our new values, is creativity. And under that, a behavior that I have listed, and I say behavior because I just want to show students, like, these are the values that we as a school aspire to. So these are the things that you can do in the classroom to, like, those values in yourself. And for creativity, I have on there that I use my own Spanish to create with language so the teacher can know where I flow and where I can grow. So like putting it on the student, like this is the, like as a language learner, like this is something that I believe that you should do. Like you need to show me exactly what you can do and what you can't do yet so that I can help guide you there.
All right. So let's get into this article. So it is from Airworld English Journal from September last year. And it's titled Gen Z Students and Their Perceptions of Technology in the Process of Second Language Acquisition Based on the Language Proficiency Level. It is by Evans and Polakova. So essentially what this article was looking at was student perceptions. What do students think about their use of online translators and AI like ChatGPT for language learning, for the purposes of language learning? So things like translating or editing or typing or something. What students thought about, or translating text, like a interpretive text, what are they using it for? So then they also wanted to look at if there was any difference of technology use between proficiency levels. So they use the Suffer scale. So they have students from A2 to C2 proficiency levels.
I did my little level translation. Can I provide
wonderful that? Thank you, because I never get it right.
A2 is like roughly intermediate, low, intermediate, mid. So, you know, solid advanced beginners, right? Like, so intermediate, low, intermediate, mid. And then C2 is the highest level that you can reach. The comparison that I saw called it superior or distinguished level language, but just think it highly, highly, highly proficient and educated speakers in the language.
Thank you. So these might not all be our learners. And they do talk about in the article that this isn't generalizable. Like, we can't, this is a survey done of a specific set of students at a specific location. So even though they might be the same generation as our students, it's a different set of students that they looked into here. So starting off, the literature review, pretty clear stuff. Technology use is beneficial in educational settings. A lot of different articles say this. There's been a lot of research to support that technology is beneficial. And that's like a broad use of the word technology, of course. So includes, but not is not limited to AI and translators.
I appreciated that the research review also included that Gen Z values teachers as well as tech, so that tech integrated, yeah, because they are highly connected, but they also value the role of the teacher to create the social aspect of learning, the interactivity.
Yeah, I liked that they pointed that out too, and that was, again, even though it's not generalizable, uplifting to hear. So it also says Gen Z prefers communication through social media, multitasking, personalized learning experience, visual content, and interactive videos. So I think that's where we're looking at, like, technology could be beneficial because they like these things. So how can we use these things that they like already to engage and create other learning experiences? But yeah, essentially, technology is useful in schools.
The other thing that we were talking about before we started recording is that Gen Z, which according to this article makes up 32% of the global population, that's wild, that's a lot of people, mm-hmm. That Gen Z, we talk about them as if they're digital natives. They've always been surrounded by these highly connected and connective technologies, whereas us older generations, so Bill and I, for instance, are millennials, are digital immigrants, which means that we can perhaps recall a time where we didn't have access to these technologies. I, for instance, remember getting our first family computer and the sound of dial-up. So if that is true, then we have a different relationship to the technologies than our Gen Z learners do. So we have to adapt to that. And
which I do think is a benefit.
I think so, too. Like, I think it makes us tinkerers.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
And I think that we also have to be cognizant of that technology plays and has played a different role in our lives at different times in our lives than it is playing for Gen Z right now.
I think that gives me like maybe a little bit of a better sense of, oh, if I just need to pull out my phone for just a word to translate just a word, like I know that I'm not impeding like the connection that I'm having with a person because I'm just doing something like I can really quickly pull it out if need be. But I like know that when is appropriate to do that. I've just got a different view, I guess. So yeah, there are research questions. What are the students' perceptions of technology use in English language acquisition? Do the students' perceptions of technology differ at different language proficiency levels? 150 students in a professional English class were surveyed for this, and they were given the opportunity to like respond. It was just like a multiple choice survey, but they had the opportunity to add additional information if they wanted to. So we thought we would just go back and forth and go over some of like the questions that they asked and what their results were.
So the first one is the students' attitudes towards using NMT, which is an acronym for neural machine translation. Basically, think if ChatGPT translates something or if Google Translate or DeepL translates something, these are machines that use machine learning to incorporate corpora of language samples. So translations, reliable translations between languages that they then turn into their own reliable translations for when someone makes a request for a translation. And basically, everybody's using some sort of translate. So like Google Translate 100%. Or DeepL.
Mm-hmm. 100% across all of the A2 to C2 levels.
So our students are using translation tools.
Well, we can't say ours, but
yeah. Fair, you win this round.
And then they asked about the frequency, how often they used it. And it came out to be about once a week across levels.
Most students using it once a week, that just over half for just about every sample proficiency range. And then the next biggest use would be every day, followed by once a month and then other, whatever that means. So the moral of the story is, once a week, these students who are, you know, maybe the sample has something to do with it, they're in this professional English course, they're using these machine translation tool about once a week or more.
And then the next question they asked was, why were they using translation tools? Biggest reason was for translating words. That was a vast majority of the respondents said that they were translating words. And then the other options were translating sentences and translating text.
I thought it was interesting because I always think that my students are going to translate whole sentences, but at least in this sampling, it was only 10 to 28% per proficiency band that was translating entire sentences. Most of the time, it sounds like people were just looking for words. I would also say that that kind of reflects my own use of it right now. It's like, how do you even say poison dart frog? Because why have I've never said that in German.
Exactly. So yeah, then just something that kind of stood out to me a little bit was at the B1 level. So would that be like intermediate, mid-high? Had almost 30% at translating sentences, which could just be that group, right?
Yeah. So. Right. Sample size in that group of 32, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. But again, the finding there, they thought that, you know, the behaviors would change across proficiency levels, but it just seems true here in this sample that they're mostly just using it to translate words.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And the next thing they looked at was, so part of this professional English course was they had to write different summaries of things. So they were asked if they used translation tools when writing their summary for class. And pretty much, yes.
But the behavior decreased with an increase in proficiency level.
A little bit, because it went up at C1.
Mm-hmm.
But also interesting, I thought it was interesting anyway, at C2, which it was only 10 students, all the other groups were about 30, with one group being about 50. It was 50-50. 50% said at the C2 level said that they didn't, which, yeah, did kind of show that it went up, but a few said yes.
Yep. In summary of what we've learned so far, the kids are using the Google Translates. The kids are using the Google Translates, but they're mostly using it for words. As their proficiency level goes up, there is modest decreases in using it for this sort of summary writing activities, but they're still using it. And then it moved on to experience with ChatGPT. Plot twist, most students had some experience using ChatGPT for something.
Yep.
I liked that some of the responses for it, you know, like, what did you perceive it? Some are like, wow, it is fantastic and helpful. And then some other students were like, using it is scary. And I thought that was funny.
Chaotic was another description
of
its disadvantage.
And then some students perceived, and I wonder if this is a language proficiency theme, that it was not too smart and provided wrong information, right? Yeah. You have to know some information in order to make judgments like that. You have to have that competence that we were talking about earlier. So, interesting.
Another disadvantage, causing laziness.
Well, and a lot of these students, too, to be clear, a lot of these students were actually using these for professional purposes as well in their lives outside. So they were using it to help with coding and programming sort of tasks as well. And so they were like, yeah, it's smart, but it's scary and it's not always right. Then we get to what I thought was the most interesting table in the whole study, which is just a kind of summary of the open-ended responses about students' perceptions of the advantages and disadvantages of ChatGPT. And I would love to go through these a little bit. I think it would be great to just go in more deeply kind of on these advantages and disadvantages, because I think ultimately we're going to be asked to speak to these by students and perhaps their families, and maybe even our administrators. And so I think if we're able to speak to these, we can better manage technology use, or at least understand our students' use of technology. Okay, so let's go, Bill. What are some of the advantages of using ChatGPT according to this study? They found it to be user-friendly. Sure.
Pretty straightforward. Yeah, type to it.
Smart. Fine. Yeah. Time saver.
Can be.
My question going into that is, what is it saving you time from doing? Like, what are you not doing in that time that you saved? And my argument would be that if you're using it to summarize something for you, then you need to be doing that reading to increase your reading proficiency. And that is a very good use of your time, because that will make your reading and your writing better and your speaking and your listening. And so when I see things that are time saving, I'm like, is the task we're saving time on worth saving time on? And in this instance, I don't know that it can be.
They have to be using the brain power.
Yes. You can only learn what you think about. So. Fast and effective, same concern by me.
Reducing mistakes could be, and I think I can talk a little bit about that later, but I think it could be. Something that I've seen before is like one of the best corrections that you can get is just an edited version of your text so that you can get the correct input of what you want it to say. So like in that sense, it could. Potentially, like it could, I've thought about that in the past, like could students use it to get more, if they wanted like more personalized, because I'm not going to rewrite all of them, you know? So.
And again, I will cop to 100% to using DeepL Write as a way to check my own style in German, but then making my own decisions. I could see that if we've got 30, you know, I have some classes, 34, 36 kids in it, I don't, like you said, have the brain power to go through every sentence and iron out every error, which some students do actually want. And so that might be a place to teach them the smart use of technology to get that sort of feedback. And then also to have in the back of their mind, this might not be right, or it might not say exactly what I want to say. Advantages.
Improving language skills. They say so. Well, I'm not sure. More study needed. Providing feedback. I think it can do okay. Providing an opportunity to chat with ChatGPT when learning a new language, and I think via text, like it's a pretty sympathetic reader. So yes. If you're wanting to just like type back and forth, I think that it's probably fine. Like,
I also have read some articles about people entering psychosis because of their conversations with ChatGPT.
Oh, yeah.
So like, you know, and if it starts advising them to do certain things, even if they're like,
You can
you know,
cut
the
this out, but there
language,
was a woman.
they're
You can cut this
practicing
out
their
if you
language
want.
skills. And it was like, have you thought about robbing a bank? Like in Spanish, like that would be wild, but not out of the realm of possibility, apparently.
All right,
So
so what
with the
is this?
idea that like, we also need to, you know, this is
Oh,
maybe a
sorry.
broader societal conversation, but we need to talk about how ChatGPT is not a person that experiences emotion. And based on its programming, may or may not be advising you ethically or thoughtfully or humanly about
Yeah.
what to do in your life or responding to you in a human way, because it is not a human. So that, you know, if it's like, ooh, neat, a chatbot, I can go back and forth in the language and practice my conversation skills. Conversations always have content. And so with that, oh, that opens up, you know, a potential can of worms, something to keep in mind, something to talk to students about.
Something that I saw a while ago and it's just stuck with me. It was from a professor named Bruna at Michigan State. She said, like, yeah, AI, like just kind of talking to this topic, but like, yeah, AI and translation can translate for you, but like it can't actually communicate at a level. Like, you can't actually get across what you want to say, which is like always been an issue with translators. Like, there's more to language than just the words.
And then they get into the disadvantages,
Yes.
and they say, disadvantage is ChatGPT, not trustworthy. But there have been many documented cases of hallucinations of information that is wrong, citations that were completely made up. I even just saw the other day, I clipped a screenshot from a teacher group on Facebook where somebody had been like, I wanted a blank map or like a map to review Latin American country geography. And it was like, here's Ecuador, and it was like just Argentina or something. You know what I mean? Like it just like everything was completely wrong, and it just got gradually worse as you went. I was like, oh no. And so, you know, there are many cases where even if we're being told via marketing materials that it is PhD level intelligence, you know, if someone with a PhD made these sorts of errors in basic information in their research, they would be laughed out of the academy. So, you know. Not trustworthy. That's a big concern.
Causing laziness, it can. I think my one suggestion to students, like if you're gonna use AI, at least ask it, at least just add like help me with before your prompt. Like, just don't ask it to do the thing, ask it to help you get started.
And I think people coming at comprehension-based teaching come from the perspective of language learning should not be hard in the sense of so abstract and unrelated to actual communication that it is impossible to transfer that, right? Like we are like, we want to give students input and interaction in the language because that is actually what builds proficiency, not the memorized study of grammar and vocabulary. And so we think you know, it's kind of a pithy saying to just be like, oh, it shouldn't feel hard, it should feel effortless, like you're so engaged in the message and that sort of thing. But I think that, like, you know, in this day and age, like paying attention is hard. And it's hard for not just for our students, it's hard for me. And so I would say that, like, you do have to make efforts. There is some difficulty in learning languages because it takes time, it takes consistency, and that those things can be hard. And so it shouldn't be prohibitively hard. It should be hard enough to cause changes in your brain's architecture. Learning is literally changing the architecture in your brain, and that requires some sort of effort.
I've told students in the past, like, the hardest part about my class is that you have to pay attention even when you don't want to. Because, like, I will do my best to make things engaging. No, engaging, not necessarily fun. I will do my best to make things engaging, but you still gotta stick with me even if you're bored. I'll do my best, but even if it's not fun, hopefully I can get you to think about something in a new way.
You have to think about stuff to learn it. And so in making the decision to think sometimes is a hard initial starting point. One more little story that is related to this is that I had seen a study somewhere that was talking about the use of AI to in cancer doctors who were doing cancer diagnoses, and that over time the reliance on the AI to help make these determinations and to make these diagnoses, the doctors became less effective because they offloaded more of their thinking, their intuition and expertise that they built from being doctors
They're not accessing all the information.
Right. It atrophied and it made them less effective doctors. So that I think is an illustrative case. You know, like in order to write, you got to practice that right muscle. In order to listen and read, you got to practice those muscles. So
if you're going to use AI, at least make sure that you're still thinking.
Yes.
Don't just... Yeah. Providing wrong answers was another disadvantage. I think that goes along with not trustworthy. Not the best way to learn languages. Complete opposite.
It's funny that, like, again, they're like, oh, it's so effective. It gives me so much feedback. And then other people are saying, it's not the best way to learn languages, which is interesting. I'd be curious to probe, like, the students' thinking on that. Like, what is the best way to learn languages? Mm-hmm. And that's also something that we can forefront as teachers, is talking about the value of input and interaction in language acquisition.
Yeah. And then finally, chaotic and scary.
I do find it scary that data centers are being built that are having environmental impacts immediately, that they are overwhelming, showing further examples of systemic and environmental racism, that there is bias often baked into codes, that as those biases to be reproduced but are presented as objective fact. I saw another study that was talking about lesson plans that were cooked up via AI. And if you let the AI know that you were making these lesson plans for Black students, it made the lesson plans like worse, like less rigorous, less engaging. So that these biases that we see in our society are getting reproduced in this code. These are not, just because it's a computer doesn't mean it's this perfect objective thing. Mm-hmm. It is made up of the humans who made it and the inputs that they decide to feed into it. That to me, plus the environmental impacts, that to me is scary. So I'm with those learners with these disadvantages.
Go off. I think people don't know about these kinds of things. And if they did, maybe they'd rethink how they used it. And moving on, final thing. No, there's two more.
But we can lump them maybe together, which is that, like, do they think it is a good way to learn another language, and are they motivated to do it?
And overall, they said yes, they felt it was effective to use technology, but they also said that most of their language skills come from video games, songs, movies, and apps. The internet is a creative, good, important way to learn languages. So it might not be specifically talking about using ChatGPT there for language learning.
Totally. Yeah, the kind of final sentence in this little section. Mm-hmm. The motivation to use technology in language learning stems from the desire to learn new vocabulary, understand English, which is the language mm-hmm. being learned in the study, understand English content, enjoy flexible learning at their own pace, and have access to learning material anytime. So I think that speaks to the many uses that, you know, when we think about technology use, we need to be specific in responses to things like generative AI, like ChatGPT, in our analytical AI in these, like, deep, you know, language learning models and things like that, mm-hmm. and about what impacts they have and how we can use them. But then student technology use also includes things like watching movies. Yay! Like mm-hmm. watching YouTube content about stuff they like. Fabulous. Duolingo, if you like that sort of thing. The radio. Yes. Other apps. There's so many good things that they listed on here. Mm-hmm. Podcasts. I use podcasts in my learning a lot. Movies. Apps. Movies and games come up again. TV. You know, getting some of them were using it for classes with native speakers of the language. Fabulous. That's a great use of technology, I'd say. So we have to be differentiated in our discussion of it, but also, you know, aware of, you know, the different ways that students are using it, because some can be beneficial and some less so.
Going back to a point that you made earlier, here's a little bit of a quote. Although Gen Z students place a high value on technology-supported learning, they also recognize the importance of teachers in the process of foreign language learning. They accept teachers as mentors who offer guidance, support, and meaningful interactions to facilitate language learning.
A computer is not going to understand the emotions that they go through as they learn about other languages, mm-hmm. about other cultures in the same way. Bill and I are both second language learners of the languages that we teach. When we understand that journey, native speakers also have that experience of trying to convey something about their native language that causes them to become very clear about mm-hmm. things that were under the surface for them. And so I think we all have those experiences as language teachers that they value and that they connect with, and that become grounds for their learning and for our continued learning as educators. So they want that guidance. They want that meaningful interaction. They want support. and they want an environment that they feel comfortable in. So the clinker's not going to do that.
All right, girl boss, what do you think? What are some of the ways that you think you've integrated technology, whether it is teaching how to use translators or how to use like these tools appropriately? What do you think you've done for students?
I think I've touched on some of my effective use of it, but I think that, again, it is being transparent with students about what effects different technologies have and what they're not going to get out of using technology. And so if I told my students again that I don't use a Google Translate occasionally to get a word, I'd be lying, right? But I'm also using it for a word with the idea that I need to maybe look into context, mm-hmm. which will help me know the word better and know that I'm choosing the right word. I can tell my students that I use DeepL Write to better my writing, but sometimes I know it is not quite correct because I have read extensive amounts of language in my time as a learner. So just more nuanced conversations about what the actual effects are. And then, you know, I have my own personal feelings about language learning apps, how they are effective, what they can be effective for. And so maybe using my knowledge and experience of that to kind of redirect students towards meaningful sources of input, content that they already consume in their L1 that they would love to consume in the language, getting them, finding them their entry points into that use of technology, accessing the world in a way that we were never able to. I don't know if this was the case for you, Bill, but when I started learning German, YouTube didn't exist. And so when I was finding music, yeah. I was searching music review websites and then going on iTunes, I think, and just searching like German music or Deutsche Musik, and then just like listening to little samples of whatever I could and being like, that seems okay. And then buying the album, listening to it, and deciding if it was worth the gift card, you know, that sort of thing. Like we again grew up in a different generation of technology use. So it's almost easier than ever now, but we need to, you know, again, have those nuanced conversations with students about potential pitfalls of getting inaccurate content, getting, you know, unnatural language from computer generated stuff. Like there's a proliferation of AI produced videos with AI imagery and then AI text spoken by an AI voice. And sometimes it's just like weird and unnatural and not a good use of time. So I have these nuanced conversations with students about the pros and cons, the advantages, disadvantages, and what really is going to give them the most bang for their buck if they are going to spend their time using technology for language learning.
And I think I really only have like one thing to share. And it's like the one AI thing that I've shared other places. It's called schoolai.com. And what I like about it is that students sign into it like they're signing into like GimKit or Blookit or one of those online quiz games. And it's just a chatbot, but you as the teacher can give it specific directions on like what to talk about and how to give it feedback. I've put in instructions so that it would give, like, if a student says yo tiene, it would respond like, oh, you said yo tiene, which means he or she has. You want to use Tango, I have. So like I've given it instructions to do that. And on School AI, you can also like in real time see the students' chats. So you can see what they're asking it. You can download all of the chats later so you can like look at what they asked, what were kind of themes of things that they asked, and it also summarizes the students' conversations with like little headlines for each student to say like, this is how they're doing, or it even will say like, looks like so-and-so's off task. Like, so it's like, so I think what I like about that is that I can very, very closely monitor how they're using it as a language learning tool.
Okay, yeah, that was my next question. Again, as a kind of pretty vocal like AI hater, like what effects did you think that have for your students and then for you and your instruction?
Yeah, so last year I did a little experiment with a zero data collection other than my memories. I had students use it to workshop their writing. So I gave them the prompt, like the final, the unit assessment prompt. I gave it to them at the very beginning of the unit. I gave them 10 minutes to write about it on paper. And I said, if you don't know a word, write the word in English. And then gave them access to the AI and had them type it into that. And like I said, I had set up like specific kind of feedback. And I remember thinking, not to what extent, but I remember thinking that the writings after that were good.
Oh.
Yeah. So
I would love for you to revisit that and then like bring it back to the pod, because
sure.
Again, this study didn't go quite into the effects, like what are the effects on proficiency level, etc. So I would be curious, like if there are things that augment language learning, like I would love to know about them. I would love to know how to use them effectively and ethically. I remain skeptical that there are not better ways to get similar results, right? Through more reading, right. Through more listening, and that sort of thing. But
yeah. And I think, yeah, because right now it's really just text is all it can really do. And I hope that's all it can ever really do. Like, geez. I know there's like voice mode, but like, anyway, as a language partner, that's kind of scary.
I just imagine a world in which it's like, generate my German voice, and then it's like, hallo, ich heiße Ben. And that would just be, that is actually how I talk German, so I'd be like, wow, it's really good. How'd they make it this good?
Wild. All right. Anything else?
No, I just wanted to reinvite everybody to our book study. Again, we'll be back in the week of September 1st for Chapter 2 of Proficiency-Based Instruction, Teaching Grammar for Proficiency. The link is in our show notes. But I'd be curious to hear what people... Obviously, this is a super hot topic. There are lots of sessions at any educator conference about the use of technology. And then even more, you know, more specifically now, AI is everywhere at teacher conferences. So I'm sure our listeners have some sort of opinion, whether it be half-baked or fully formed, we'd be glad to hear it. So reach out to us, meet us on socials, which we will link in our show notes, and we'd be happy to hear from you.
Yeah, and I hope everyone's had, if you're starting the school year or you're getting ready to start the school year, I hope that the 2025-2026 school year slays.
Bye.
Bye.